Fallout Equestria, Chapter 32, Conversation in the Calm Before. We could form our own secret society. Well, I had just barely floated the painting of Splendid Valley back into place when Omash came in.
Well, what?
I asked, hoping I didn't sound as guilty as I felt. Did you sneak around behind my back and break into my safe to look at your memories even after both I and you told you not to? Oh, goddesses, it was bad enough that I disappointed myself. But just how deplorable was it that I broke into Omash's private safe to do so? I hated my curiosity and I hated myself for being so weak. I looked to Omash, wondering what to say. Should I admit it? Would it hurt her? Did she already know? Little Pip, Omash said with a sad yet stern voice. I don't know what upsets me more, that you broke into my safe and tried to undo everything you'd worked so hard for, or that you actually considered lying to me about it.
But I...
My heart broke. You paused to think, Omash frowned. It doesn't take that long to think of how to say yes. My gaze fell to the floor. I think you'd best sleep elsewhere tonight. I felt my blood freeze. I looked up into Omash's eyes, pleading. The beautiful little gray unicorn gave me a soft, sad smile. I was there when you made your little speech to yourself. I knew you were probably going to do this, and so did you. I hoped you could be better than that. Her words hit me like a buck to the gut. But I'm not angry at you for failing, just disappointed. I would rather she be angry. Disappointed hurts so much more. I could handle being yelled at, but the idea that I had failed and saddened Omash. Omash looked at me tenderly. Before your worries take you to dark places, I'll tell you up front, this doesn't change my feelings for you at all. And my disappointment will be short-lived. I'm not sending you away because I don't want to see you. I'm sending you away because you've been bad and I'm punishing you. She gave me a little smile. And I think we both know you need that as much as deserve it. The smile faded. I'll see you tomorrow, little Pip. It took me most of the ride down the elevator to figure out why I needed punishment as much as I deserved it. There was no question of the latter. The pit in my stomach and the self-loathing in my heart told me that I had done wrong. I had wronged myself. And far worse, I had wronged her. My voice in the darkness. And with that, even if she forgave me, I would never be able to accept forgiveness until she had punished me for it too. I couldn't move on while my tail was twitching. I needed something to fall on my head or I'd always be looking for it. I wasn't entirely sure how I'd come up with that analogy.
Awareness, it was under E!
But I knew that it was appropriate. I walked slowly down the hall towards the door to our suit, casually unlocking it with my telekinesis. What was once unimaginable had become a feat of such ease I barely focused on it. My mind was largely elsewhere. I was determined to remain at Ten Pony Tower for a little while longer, not for myself, but for my companions. Each of them had nearly died in the last few days. Zenith and Calamity would both have been turned to ash by the Hellhound's attacks if it had not been for the spell Velvet Remedy learned from Lifebloom last time we were here. Each had suffered fearsome wounds. Velvet's injury still left her in a cast despite the most powerful healing magic and best care the Wasteland could provide. Nor was I untouched, but I feared for them more than myself. Deep down, I somehow knew that I was expendable, but they were not. I had a lot of repairing to do. I wondered if I should try to get some counseling, or should we work through this alone? I wasn't sure where best to begin, or even how much I may have already done. Was I doomed to spend the next days repeating discussions we'd already had, but that I didn't remember? Seeing my friends look at me awkwardly as I initiated difficult conversations for a second time? Couldn't I have at least left myself some notes? Of course, as they say, hindsight is... Well, no, even that didn't really apply. My hindsight was perforated. Even worse, I was smart enough to realize that I shouldn't be trying to put the pieces back together. If I thought about things too much, I might be able to reconstruct lines of logic that I didn't want to have in the forefront of my brain when I next confronted the goddess. I suspected that Trixie's telepathy didn't extend much beyond reading my surface thoughts. If it had, I think things would have gone a lot differently in Merry Pony. Or perhaps she could, but it just required a level of focus the goddess couldn't commit to while maintaining connection to all her alicorns. The fact that Calamity had been able to surprise her about something he had been looking at told me she wasn't nearly as on top of Curran's thoughts as she wanted us to believe. Still, if I knew the plan or even suspected what I was up to, there was no way I could avoid thinking about it while I enacted it. These thoughts so preoccupied my head that I did not even notice the sounds as I entered the room. But the sight stopped me dead. Calamity and Velvet Remedy. Together. In bed. Intertwined. Moving. Doing. I shouldn't be here. Leaving now. Bye. I had become rather exceptional at stealths. I was able to slip out fast and smooth without making the slightest peep. Without being seen. The click as I closed the door behind me sounded louder than a little Macintosh. I froze. My whole body was tense, my nerves covered in ice. My mind was reeling. I couldn't begin to formulate feelings of my own about what I had just walked in on. I was still panicking. On the other side of the door, I heard voices. My heart was pounding.
"Did Sampony just open the door?"
she asked cautiously.
"I locked it,"
he responded. And then, in almost perfect unison,
"Little Pup!"
I ran, as fast and as silently as I could. As I raced down the hall, I could swear I heard Zenith's voice float out of nowhere, proclaiming, "Doomed." I clopped my hoof on the door to Twilight's Ascenium. Part of me knew I was supposed to be banished from Omarsh's company for the day, but I wasn't looking to get away with anything, just to get away. I needed a place to hide and a place to stay the night, and Omarsh came to the forefront of my thoughts. No pony answered. The door was locked and I wasn't about to unlock another anything without permission. I dashed up the stairs to the balcony and lifted my hoofs towards the door to the emergency broadcast station. Was she busy? Would the beat of my hoof interrupt a recording? Did I have the right to take that risk? And what would she have to say to me? How could I ask her to make an exception for me because I had managed to invade the privacy of even more of my friends? Doomed indeed. And I deserved it. I put down my hoof. I'd just spent the day wandering aimlessly around Ten Pony Tower, avoiding every pony and waiting until the final hour of my exile was over. Not a problem. I could go half a day without getting myself in trouble. I heard a chime in the atrium below. The elevator doors slid open. I crouched flat on the balcony as I saw Velvet Remedy and Calamity step out into the atrium, Calamity helping support Velvet with one of his wings. Oh, goddesses. I couldn't face them right now. I backed up against the MASEBS door, hiding.
"You think she's upset?"
Calamity's voice sounded below. I could hear the odd thump of Velvet's foreleg cast as she moved awkwardly into the atrium.
"Well, I wish that she just sees this as an opportunity to get back at me for some of my teasing."
Velvet Remedy's voice floated up to me. Her chocolatey smooth voice had a slightly harried timbre.
"But I doubt that she will. The poor girl had a crush on me for ages, and while I've been under the impression that she's over it, I worry she might still feel hurt."
Did I? I wasn't sure. I was too wrapped up in the fear of being caught. And now I worried that I might feel like that. It would be unfair and selfish. I had a relationship with Omarsh that left me exhausted, to be honest. What right did I have to begrudge anyone else a relationship of their own? Especially my two closest friends. I should be happier than ever for them.
"I honestly don't think you give Lil Pip enough credit. She's got too much heart to let jealousy eat away at her. Or us. I reckon I get more to worry about in that regard from your bird."
It dawned on me that I wasn't feeling happy for them. I didn't think I felt jealous. I wanted to be a much better pony than that. If I was jealous, I didn't deserve the friendship of either of them. But no, I didn't think it was jealousy either that I was feeling. It was concern, an achingly pessimistic worry. Calamity's voice rose up from below again.
"Do you think she's here? Seems awfully..."
"Quiet. Yes, now that you mention it, if she was in Omar's company, I would expect we'd be able to hear her. At least that is what Zenith would have me believe.
I buried my face in my forehoofs, suddenly blushing. There was absolutely no way this could get more awkward and humiliating.
I mean, 31, Celestia's mercy.
Okay, I was wrong. Now it couldn't get worse.
That's a lot, right?
Calamity asked in buckish ignorance.
Yes, that's a lot,
Remedy said. I could almost hear the rolling of her eyes.
Did you?
Oh no, did Calamity really ask that? I heard the soft smack of Avid Remedy's hoof. Good for her.
You do not ask a lady that, Calamity,
she scolded. Then, in a smaller voice, she admitted.
Yes, twice.
Twice?
Oh, the big idiot.
And we were... than she was.
I felt my ears burning as I realized my Pegasus friend was trying to do the math.
How the hell did she have time to come to Splendid Valley?
Indeed,
Velvet said with a slight trace of bitterness.
Clearly, Omar's cutie mark should be Little Pip. Obviously, that's what she's best at doing.
I wanted to melt into the wall and disappear into some void beyond. I wanted the moon itself to come crashing down through the ceiling and crush me. I didn't want them to find me, and I didn't want to be hearing this private conversation. And the mere thought that they might discover I had been unintentionally eavesdropping made me die inside. I heard a splash. One of them had stepped into the fountain's pool.
After Mary Pony, I finally understand the Alicorn in this room.
Velvet's voice mused, changing the subject.
I had been wondering how and why Twilight Sparkle would have chosen such a decoration.
Well, I do find her, Calamity stated slowly. I think you ought to do the talking.
Oh, and why is that?
Well, y'all are just better at it than I am. Little Pip will want to know about what we are now and all. I'd just mess it up.
And just what are we now?
Velvet said silkily.
Damn it.
Calamity said in frustration and confusion.
That's just a question I was trying to avoid.
Slowly he admitted.
I don't know.
Velvet's voice was gentle and kind.
You're Calamity and I'm Velvet Remedy, just like we were before, only more intimate.
I heard another splash.
I'm not going to push for us to be anything more than you want us to be. I'm never going to tie you down or demand a commitment that you aren't looking for.
I couldn't help but feel this conversation was built upon a great many that I didn't been privy to before, and that I had no excuse to be listening to this one. My mind began to scramble for ways to escape.
You don't even need to ask, girl.
I know,
Velvet purred.
But I need you to know that I'm not looking to change anything about you. Well, except maybe for your grammar. I just want to be with you.
If I opened the door behind me, closed it, and stood up quickly, surely they would think I had just stepped out of the station behind me? It seemed like a good plan. The door was locked. Of course it was. Well, surely I couldn't get myself into any more trouble.
Oh, dang it. I don't know nothing what to say. I ain't any good at this sort of thing.
You don't know anything to say.
Velvet tried pointlessly.
I up, wish I did. Maybe I just should hold you.
The door clicked. I slid the door open, then stood as I closed it again.
Little Pip.
I looked down at them, both standing in the fountain's pool, Calamity's forehoof sliding away from an interrupted embrace. My heart raced and I blurted out the first thing I thought of.
Oh, hello, I was just in there with Omar in the place doing the thing.
They were giving me odd looks. I wanted to face off myself into unconsciousness. Instead, I gave them a forced and probably awkward smile. They looked at each other, then back to me, their expressions melting into one of compassion and concern. I realized that my awkwardness would be taken as discomfort over what they knew I had seen and not what they didn't know I had heard. Velvet Remedy started to call up to me. The door behind me opened and Omar peeked out.
Little Pip, did you just try to come in?
Her eyes narrowed at me.
That's not how punishment works.
Calamity and Velvet Remedy exchanged looks of quick realization. Doomed. I'm not a clever pony. After 20 minutes of explaining and confessing and apologizing, with a hint of blubbering, I found myself sitting across from Velvet and Calamity at Omarge's table, feeling small and guilty as Omarge made everyone tea. At last, however, I had been able to put solid thoughts to my feelings. The problem now was how or even if I should voice them. What if my worries were correct? What damage would I do by shining a light on them? Or worse, what if I was wrong, but my questions led to doubts in their own minds? The silence stretched awkwardly between the three of us. Velvet looked patient but strained. Calamity fidgeted. If I said anything, it would have to be now, while they were together and could draw support from each other as they answered. But what if... Calamity rubbed a hoof on the table, absently asking Velvet,
"Hey, your figures I did it on here?"
I changed the subject quickly, and not just because the answer was yes, and I didn't want them thinking about that when Omarge put tea and a plate of cakes on the table. "I guess I'm just concerned. I mean, you two are my closest friends. We travel everywhere together, and with hardly any pony else. And you're worried we've grown intimate out of convenience?" Velvet Remedy finished for me tactfully. Pretty much, yeah." Calamity snorted.
"Now I know how you all might think that way coming from a stable. But I've been down here for a while now. I've had plenty of other options. Just never cared for him."
He nodded upwards.
"Had options up there too, but none of the mess in the service shared my feelings about helping the pony folk down here. A right turn if you ask me."
I had to admit I'd never even considered the idea of Calamity having relationships available to him with any pony other than us. He just seemed like such a lone defender that I thought of him as being just as much a stranger to the rest of the world as we were. But hadn't Railride claimed that Calamity had been offered a home and a place in Europalooza? Omarge came in with the tea and cakes. She smiled and gave me a little kiss on my horn, which suddenly felt pleasantly warm as she floated a cup of tea onto the table in front of me. "I'll admit," Velvet Remedy began, "that I was worried about the same thing at first. The first thing that attracted me to Calamity was his wings."
"I swear, y'all got a feather fetish,"
Calamity nipped playfully. Velvet giggled primly. "No, I had just abandoned my home and risked whatever I would find out here for freedom, and there you were, more free than I ever imagined any pony could be. Not even the ground could hold you."
"Oh, shucks, I ain't no different than any other Pegasi."
"Oh, but you are," Velvet cooed maturely. "I didn't know it at the time, but you are so much more. I always wanted to be a medical pony, and I embraced the first chance I got to. But I left my home behind for selfish reasons. You cut your shackles because they were preventing you from helping other ponies. You freed yourself out of compassion and kinship." Calamity was blushing now. I realized I liked seeing him like that. It brought out a beauty in him. "You truly care about ponies," she continued, her eyes roaming over Calamity. "And I've seen how you are with us, especially with little Pip," she said, turning back to me. "He'll stand by you, never leave you, protect you even from yourself." "Always there to catch me," I found myself saying softly. Velvet Remedy smiled and nodded. "I feel safe with him around because I know he'll protect us. Especially you, since you seem to need it the most. But he has always been right there for me when I needed him too." I was suddenly feeling guilty again, this time for monopolizing Calamity's time. I lowered my head, breathing in the calming scent of the zebra chai tea wafting up from my cup. Scowling a little, Velvet Remedy couldn't help but add, "I'm not saying we are a match made in the clouds. He does tend to jump to violence as a solution far too readily for my tastes, and he's not the only one." She fixed me with a look. For a few moments, her gaze held me like steel, making me squirm. Then her expression relaxed. "But I realize that, in the equestrian wasteland, violence is often the most appropriate response, although not as often as you two take to it, and at least both of you are motivated to shed the blood you do out of justice, compassion, and a sense of responsibility for your fellow pony, all of which seems sorely lacking in far too many ponies out here." She turned to Calamity with a look that clearly said, "Your turn." Omarge trotted around and sat behind me, watching unobtrusively. I felt a gentle support radiating off of her, despite her recent disappointment. I was supposed to being punished, but there was no hint of that. I found myself fervently wishing at Calamity to not blow it.
I wasn't happy for them because I was worried they were going to get hurt. But I wanted them to be together, I realized. I hoped for them, and Velvet's words were like a ray of real, untainted sunshine. For the first time, I really thought maybe they could last together. So long as Calamity didn't say anything stupid in the next few minutes, that was. Calamity shuffled, looking uncomfortable.
I take it I can't just say ditto.
I took a long sip from my cup, the slightly bitter liquid washing over my tongue. I felt the warmth of the tea spread soothingly through me. Velvet Remedy gave Calamity a shake of her head. The Pegasus reached back to brush at his mane, accidentally tipping his desperado hat into his eyes.
Well, she's beautiful, he started. Not just outside. Behind her outer beauty and occasional abrasive personality, she's really beautiful inside.
I winced. He was going to be paying for that for a bit.
Oh man,
from Calamity's shuffle, I guessed he knew it too. But he was being honest. I hoped Velvet took that into account.
Look, when we first rescued her, I didn't know what to think. She was helping slavers, and she was, well, I was expecting her to be fancy and prissy and highfalutin like the folks in this tower here, but she weren't like that at all. She's beautiful, but she's, I don't know, down to earth?
He paused, looking for a word, then smiled as he settled on,
practical. She's practical. And more importantly, she's devoted. She weren't helping slavers cause she sympathizes for any of what they're doing, but because she's dedicated to helping folk, and she don't let unpleasantness or discomfort get in the way.
Calamity wrapped his tail around Velvet Remedy, who was holding him with rapt attention.
She's faithful. She's stuck by our side even as we walked into hell. Her wanting to play diplomatic like we aggressive or evil types does wear sin, but I reckon maybe there's something to us sometimes, and she does that cause she really cares about folk and is committed to helping them. Even if a mass of them don't deserve it, and like her to ask if they do.
He shrugged.
How could I not absolutely love her for that?
Looking into Velvet's eyes, Calamity finished by saying,
It's like, you're just what the doctor ordered, you know.
Velvet rolled her eyes at the corniness but smiled.
The Equestrian Wasteland ain't a pretty place. It's rough and it's grim and it's bloody, and some days it can be hard to remember what's worth fighting for out here. But I don't have to look any further than at this here charcoal unicorn mare next to me to be reminded just how good ponies can be, and just how worse it all the struggle is.
Part of me wanted to jump up and hug them. Part of me wanted to tell them to get a room. But then I was kinda to blame for them not being there.
Okay, I'm convinced, I said with a smile.
Omash wrapped her forelegs around me from behind. Our coupleness made me feel less awkward in front of theirs.
Yes,
Velvet Remedy said suddenly to Calamity while giving the cakes a declining look.
I think they did things on this table.
Omash bit one of my suddenly burning ears playfully. Far too late, I changed the subject.
So, how long have you two been together?
Calamity laughed.
You mean physically? Since what?
He looked at Velvet, who was trying to keep a ladylike distance from the question.
Yesterday?
I blinked.
Oh, come on, little pup. We didn't even kiss before last week.
Velvet Remedy sighed, then said smoothly,
Really, little pup, we have you to thank that we have a relationship at all.
Wait, what?
Yep. If it weren't for you acting like we was already a couple back at that stable, I don't think we could have started looking at each other that way.
I blushed so hard I should have caught on fire. Calamity rolled two memory orbs across the table.
You said it was okay to see these again.
I caught them in a telekinetic blanket, careful not to focus directly on either of them.
Are they mine?
Nah, traded for them. The caravan pony claimed they were genuine memories of Rainbow Dash.
He gave me a wary smirk as my heart gave a little leap. I was actually thrilled to learn anything more I could about those ponies. When had it become such a passion?
Are they?
I asked hopefully.
From what I said last time,
Calamity responded with a voice suggesting he felt snookered.
Not exactly.
I floated them into my saddlebags for safekeeping and finished my tea. It was now barely lukewarm. The conversation had lasted a while. After Velvet and Calamity had taken their leave, I felt Omage's forelegs slip away from me.
The cups, saucers, and plate of cakes lit up with the glow of Omarge's horn and began to float themselves back to the kitchen sink. I felt like a warm blanket had been pulled from me on a chilly winter night.
I guess I should go now. I'm still being punished, right?
I got up and began moving, but not in any particular direction.
Yes,
Omarge said a touch reluctantly. I wished punishment didn't mean having to be apart from her. The thought of being alone tonight hurt more than it did before. I stopped next to a desk littered with Omarge's personal things. She had a triptych of pictures framed on the desk. Pictures of me in the wasteland, my friends nearby. The pictures were taken from some place high above and far away, zoomed in until I nearly filled the frame, but washed out with the odd tint of all the air between the camera and its subject. I suspected that the pictures were taken by the cameras on those spires. And I suspected the willing desperation tonight hurt Omarge as much as me.
Couldn't you just spank me instead or something?
I asked, hoping for a faster punishment. Omarge laughed.
No, but tomorrow night I might, as a reward.
I looked at her in confusion, one ear dipping.
How would a spanking be a reward?
Oh. Oh. Oh my gosh.
I lost balance, my head crashing to the desktop. I backed up, stumbling, seeing stars. Omarge was chuckling even as she trotted up to make sure I was okay.
I think I better go now, I told her. Before I hurt myself. Again.
I ambled through the market sector of Ten Pony Tower, paying little attention to the ponies around me. The smells from the restaurants and snack shops teased my nostrils with promises that were probably too wonderful for the centuries-old packaged food to deliver, but I let my nose drag me towards one of them anyway. Looking at the wall-mounted menu, my eyes widened at the prices, each of which was now written in pencil with the telltale signs of several previous erasings. I lifted my pip back, checking how many caps I had on hoof. Velvet Remedy was the queen of barter, and so we'd been letting her keep most of our caps. I barely had enough for a sparkle cola or a box of stuffed apple cakes. Filled with a sweet, candy apple filling and 5,000 times the daily recommended amounts of preservatives. Yay! I plopped down my bottle caps and ordered the cola. I watched as the pony slid the caps off the counter with a hoof, then picked up a crowbar in his mouth and trotted back to a still-functional sparkle cola machine, prying it open and fetching my drink. A chain and padlock on the ground told me how they kept their supply secure at night. I took my cola, floating it up to my muzzle and tasting the lukewarm, deliciously carroty flatness. I was an hour into my exile and already hating it. I spotted Calamity leaving the constabulary looking disgruntled.
Highway robbery, he groused. Anywhere else I could buy an armor-piercing round for what they're asking for a rubber one, he added. Well, if anywhere else sold them.
I scampered over to trot at his side.
How's your wing?
Calamity smiled, judging my intentions.
Vevin and I are both doing fine. Well, not fine. She's hurting inside. What happened to both of us in old Olney scares her badly. But we're working through it together, so don't go trying to set us up with a shrink again.
I blinked.
I did that.
I had considered it earlier.
Oh, yep, not one of your better plans, Calamity noted. But well-intentioned.
I wasn't sure I wanted to see that memory. Ever. We walked in silence a while. I drank from my cola, then offered some to my friend. Calamity accepted, biting down on the bottle's rim and tilting it back for a swig. Then he passed it back. We walked on in silence some more.
I'm worried, little pup.
I nodded. There were about 100 things for us to be worried about, plus several extra ones for Calamity as he plunged into this newly deeper relationship with Velvet Remedy.
The Enclave, that experiment in Old Olney, that was new. Post-Calamity, no. I don't know why that would be there, but they wouldn't be doing that or what they're all up to.
He looked at me.
And I'm worried.
Of all the possible worries he might have, this was the one I expected the least. But I knew that I shouldn't have. These were his pony folk, his old home. They had to be weighing on him as much as concerns for Stable 2 weighed on me.
The Pegasi are good pony folk, Calamity said. Whatever happens, remember that. Because the Enclave, they ain't. Not so much.
I was in a large foyer marbled in gray. Large vertical windows let in the gray light of a rainy day. Outside, a dozen ponies were protesting, chanting and waving signs in the rain. Inside, ponies trotted about on personal business or stood conversing in clumps. Many wore long raincoats, still slick with a wet sheen. A few were hauling small wagons filled with boxes. My host was an Earth pony mare, sitting behind a long counter, gazing languidly at the text on a terminal. From the stirring warmth in certain parts of her body, the story she was fixated on was a cloppy nature and probably not safe for work. A familiar voice echoed from somewhere above and safely distant enough that my host was able to change the screen to a memo on wartime stress disorder without rushing suspiciously. She looked back and up, her eyes moving to a spiraling set of wrought iron stairs that descended from a mezzanine level above. The whole lobby gave me the impression of ministry architecture. A flash of light erupted about 4 yards from my host's counter, wrenching her attention away from the stairwell before she could spot who she was looking for. Rarity stood in the lobby, wobbling slightly. Her dress, mane, and the large satchel on her side all hissed up wisps of smoke. She blinked, wide-eyed, seeming disoriented. But in an eye blink, she had gathered herself together and was trotting up to my host with an urgent expression. "Hello, welcome to..." my host began politely. But Rarity was too much in a hurry for niceties. "Yes, yes, I know where I am and I know who you are," she said, waving a hoof. "I need to know if Rainbow Dash is still here. Please tell me I haven't missed her." Before my host could answer, that familiar voice answered for her. Hovering about halfway down the spiral staircase, Rainbow Dash exclaimed loudly, "Wow, Rarity, did you just teleport here?" Standing on the steps behind Rainbow Dash, Applejack was looking equally impressed. Her orange coat and blonde mane made for a welcome splash of warm colors in the stark, cool room. Rarity paused, seeing the two of them, then smiled with a soft whinny. "Yes, well, I have been trading spells with Twilight for years now, and let me tell you, it is not as easy as she makes it look." With a wince, she added, "How's my mane?" Rainbow Dash swooped down to greet her. "It's fine." Descending the stairs, Applejack added,
"It's gorgeous."
It looked like she'd run a few laps around a burning house. Rarity glanced behind her and up towards Applejack, a brief look of unease passing over her face, and then turned to Rainbow Dash. "I had some things to talk to you about, but it can wait until you're alone." Rainbow Dash blinked. Then her eyes opened wide. She whispered, "Oh, about the new..." Then glanced back towards Applejack too. "Armor?" Rarity nodded. "That and the other thing. I've been having a lot of trouble trying to perfect that spell, and I wanted to see the device you wanted embedded into." "Oh." Rainbow Dash reached back and scratched at her rainbow mane with a forehoof. "Well, Applebloom's all set to procure a life support capsule from the Ministry of Peace. We should have it by next week, but, well, she's going to be modifying it a lot. Do you need to wait until it's finished?" Rarity raised an eyebrow. "Applebloom's part of this too?" "Yeah, why, is that a problem?" "Well," Rarity said, brushing her left forehead in circles against the marble floor. "I really don't want my sister anywhere near this research of mine, and she and Applebloom are best of friends."
"Did I hear my little sister's name?"
Applejack said, trotting up from the bottom of the stairs. Rainbow Dash turned and smiled.
"Yeah, she's helping me on a project."
"I thought the Ministry of Awesome didn't actually do anything."
Dash snorted and puffed herself up.
"They didn't do anything that isn't awesome, you mean?"
Rarity and Applejack exchanged looks of doubt. "Anyway," Rarity said a little too hastily, "I really should be going."
"Wait," Applejack said. "You mean I teleported all the way here just to go?"
She frowned.
"How come I get the feeling I'm under that company?"
"Unwanted?" Rarity gasped. "Oh heavens, no. If anything, I want more, Applejack." I snickered inwardly and was glad my eavesdropping host didn't do the same. "We don't see nearly enough of each other anymore. It feels like it's been ages since..." She paused, then chimed up. "Idea! We're together right now. Let's do lunch." Rainbow Dash shrugged.
"Sure, why not?"
Applejack chimed in.
Well, I've got about an hour before I've got to be at a meeting for all the governors of the Ministry of Technology, and there's a new Epifreezer place that Caramel Apple's kids have just opened up, which I've been meaning to try.
Sounds perfect.
Rarity clapped her four hoofs with a demure squee.
Wait, aren't those the same brutes who tried to kill you with an elevator?
Applejack's eyes narrowed.
That ain't never been proven.
Still, the idea of you spending time in a room with that lot...
Yeah, Rainbow Dash jumped in. Want me to come with you? If they're planning anything funny, I'll make them think twice.
I can handle myself just fine, Dash. But I do thank you all kindly for the offer.
Seeing her two friends still frowning, unconvinced, she sighed and added,
Besides, Sergeant Steelhoofs has already offered to be my personal escort.
Have I met this guy?
Rainbow Dash asked suspiciously.
Are you sure you can trust him?
Applejack sighed.
I don't think you have, but he served with my brother. He trusted him, and so do I.
A smirk scrawled across her muzzle.
Sides, I don't plan on being there too long, just enough to give my speech. I've been practicing it all day. Wanna hear it?
Rarity's eyes widened at the thought of listening through an entire speech by Applejack, or perhaps just alarmed at having to do so in a public lobby while her mane was frizzy.
Maybe over lunch?
She suggested.
Sure!
Rainbow Dash encouraged Applejack with considerably more volume.
Let's hear it!
Okay.
Applejack paused. Stood straight and tall, cleared her throat, closed her eyes.
Y'all are fired!
Rarity and Rainbow Dash stared. Applejack opened one eye and blushed.
Well, how was it?
That's it?
Oh, yep.
She blushed some more, looking a bit proud of herself and yet a touch worried.
Awesome! You tell them, AJ!
Rainbow Dash grinned wildly as Rarity stomped on the floor with applause.
Dang, now I want to go just to see their faces.
Hey, Rainbow Dash!
A voice called out from the doorway, causing her head to whip around. Three elderly Pegasi trotted into the lobby. One of them, a light gray buck with a short, cropped, eighth-grade mane that fell over his eyes, hadn't been wearing a rain slicker and shook himself, spraying water everywhere to the shouts and grumbles of the ponies in the lobby around him.
Hello, welcome,
my host began to say, but her words trailed off as the three Pegasi pushed their way up to Rainbow Dash, ignoring every pony else, including her friends.
Hey, Rainbow, remember me?
A mustard-colored buck said, stepping forward in front of the others. He was an unusually large buck, his rain slicker covering only half of his flank, revealing most of a large orange basketball for a cutie mark. I wondered idly if he had one ball or two, then immediately wanted to jab my hoof in my eye to kill the mental image that followed. Rainbow looked them over, then narrowed her eyes and shook her head.
Sorry, no, I'm rather busy and only have time to remember important ponies.
The three all scowled. The mustard one growled, shoving a hoof into Rainbow's breast.
Well then, maybe you remember my little brother. He was one of the Pegasi you got killed fighting the dragon over Hoofington.
Rainbow Dash's eyes went wide. Her demeanor changed immediately.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Several brave ponies died valiantly that day.
Yeah,
said the third, a Pegasus the color of dark dust, with piercing blue eyes and a few remaining strands of sandy mane on his bald-coated head.
Seems an awful lot of Pegasi die valiantly these days. In fact, seems like we do the bulk of the dying. I don't know any pony in Cloudsdale who ain't lost family.
Rainbow Dash nodded sadly.
The war.
The war,
the dark dust pony scoffed.
The war's on the ground, against zebras.
And dragons,
Rainbow Dash reminded him.
They're using dragons now, in case you somehow forgot, not to mention griffin mercs.
And some of them have magic fetishes that allow them to fly,
Rarity chimed in knowingly.
If you think it's impossible for an earthbound mare to fly her way into Cloudsdale with the right magic, you have tragically short memories.
The mustard-colored one spat.
Well, they wouldn't be bringing in dragons if the Pegasi had just stayed out of the war. Now I hear you're pushing Luna's new initiative to put more Pegasi on the front lines. You won't be satisfied until every one of us is facing down zebra guns.
If the... had just...
Rainbow Dash sputtered.
What?
And we aren't the only ones who think that either,
the balding one informed Rainbow Dash coldly.
And while we might not be important, my sister is the mayor of Cloudsdale, and she...
Not just one apple buck a minute,
Applejack interrupted loudly. Now I know you all have lost kin, and I know how much that hurts. She strode up to the mustard-colored bug. I lost my own brother in this war. His name was Big McIntosh. Y'all may have heard of him.
The mustard-colored pony had the dignity to look abashed. I heard a click and a whir from above. My host turned away from the argument as the text on her screen disappeared, replaced by a flashing warning. Life grenade detected. At seemingly the same instant, Rarity gasped.
Grenade!
Ponies began to scatter, running into each other, not knowing where to go. Rarity's magic flared around her satchel, opening it. Beams of colored light shot out from the twin magical energy turrets which had descended from the ceiling. They struck a pony in the crowd, turning her into a burning pink silhouette of whomever she had been. My host looked down, scanning the floor, her actions seemingly unbearably slow. I mentally shouted for her to duck for cover, but she seemed transfixed. Her eyes fell on the metal apple not 2 yards from her desk. The dark bulk of a large, open book fell down over it, and 4 white hoofs jumped on top. The book. In an instant, a flash of fire and swirling magical energy underneath the book. A cracking sound that left a buzzing silence in its wake. A rippling of explosive force that threw Rarity back. My host stumbled, disoriented, a ringing in her ears. Every pony was shouting, but their voices seemed muffled and far away. I spotted the black book. It had landed next to Rarity, smoking but undamaged. I felt conflicting waves of horror and relief. How could any book survive smothering a magical energy grenade? What kind of book was this? And yet, thank the stars that it wasn't hurt. That book was dangerous, but it was valuable. Just looking at it, I knew how useful it must be. Rainbow Dash was fast. She flew up to my host, breaking her out of her fear-induced paralysis with a club of her forehoofs.
Lock this place down!
She shouted over the ringing in my ears.
Gather the witnesses and call the Ministry of Morale. Some pony saw something, even if they don't know it.
Applejack was trotting around, calling out,
Is every pony okay? Any pony hurt?
She turned to my host and lifted a hoof as she shouted, her voice sounding like it was coming to me through yards of thick cotton, but at least the buzzing was quickly fading.
Call up the Ministry of Peace. Have them send counselors.
My host nodded. Rarity groaned, getting shakily to her hoofs and rubbing her ears.
Quick thinking, Rarity,
Applejack said, dashing over to help her up.
I reckon you just saved a mess of lives with...
Applejack froze, staring at the black book.
Is that what I think it is?
Turning to Rarity, a dark scowl crossing her face, Applejack said,
You said you were gonna get rid of that cursed thing.
Dusting herself off, Rarity stared back.
I said I would burn it, Rarity said calmly. And I tried, but as you can see, it doesn't burn.
Lowering her voice, she whispered something to Applejack that made the Earth Pony's ears shoot up in alarm. Then, raising her voice again, she added,
I even tried to have Spike burn it. All that did was send it to Princess Celestia.
I winced. Even my host winced, realizing that couldn't have led to pleasant conversations. Applejack frowned, clearly wanting to believe her friend, but having doubts all the same. Rarity's guilty look wasn't helping.
Well, you still should have gotten rid of it.
How?
Rarity retorted stubbornly.
I doubt anything short of a megaspell could destroy it, and I certainly don't want to dispose of the book where it could find its way into the wrong hooves.
Damn it!
Rainbow Dash piped up, unknowingly interrupting her friends before their fierce discussion could grow into an argument. Dash had flown over the pile of ash which had once been a pony.
Whose idea was it to use magical energy defenses in here? A pile of ash isn't going to conveniently tell you who it was or offer up its former possessions for an investigation.
Zebra sympathizers, I would suspect.
Intoned Rarity dourly, turning towards a very upset blue-coated Pegasus.
Shouldn't jump to that conclusion, Rarity.
Applejack warned.
I don't like this blaming zebras for everything that goes wrong.
It certainly wouldn't be the first time they've taken a shot at me.
Rarity bristled. She looked at Applejack with surprise.
After Sakura's betrayal, I'm surprised you still defend them.
Just cause Sakura turned out to be a bad apple don't mean all of them are.
Applejack insisted.
Even though my host was paying more attention to the Earth Pony and the Unicorn, I was able to catch a brief guilty look across Rainbow Dash's face. I realized suddenly that Rarity and Applejack didn't know the truth about their zebra friend. The reality behind Sakura's defection was a carefully guarded secret held by only two mayors and probably only the tiniest fraction of ponies within their respective ministries.
And like the rain down the pony folk might want to take a shot at one of us.
Rarity met Applejack's statement with wide eyes.
Oh dear, you're right.
Well, if it was one of them who was behind it, they sure as sugar ain't stopped me from getting to that meeting.
Hell!
Rainbow Dash blurted out, flying up.
For all we know, the target may have been a lot.
She pointed a hind hoof towards the three Pegasi cowering in a corner.
What they were speaking amounts pretty much to sedition.
Her expression was cross and grim.
I'm beginning to think Cloudsdale needs a Ministry of Morale hub.
Rarity looked around desperately.
Oh dear, oh dear. Lunch is off, I'm afraid. I need to get back to Image. We don't have much time to figure out what to tell the news ponies to say about this. Three ministry mayors. Oh, this is bad. We have to move on this now.
As Rarity magically scooped up the black book and vanished in another flash, my host finally began actually doing her job.
When I returned from the memory orb, I was no longer on the secluded bench outside some restrooms where I had laid down to review it. I was someplace else, dark and cold. The black book floated in the darkness before me, just an afterimage that was already fading. A spotlight flared to life above me, its beam pinning me to the ornate purple and pink marbled floor as it destroyed any adjustments my eyes were making to the dark. I brought up my eyes forward sparkle, detecting at least half a dozen figures in the shadows around me. According to my EFS compass, they were not hostile. That only relaxed me slightly, considering I had apparently been abducted.
Hello?
I asked, not trying to keep the annoyance from my voice.
Who are you, and what do you want?
I immediately suspected they wanted me to do something, some task to perform, some new distraction that would further divert me from my date with the Canterlot ruins. If so, they were in for disappointment. I chose when and if I strayed off task, and I'd done too much of that already. There was a clock ticking. There was a bomb poised to destroy this very tower and every pony in it, and I didn't have time for games. A pony trotted forward, concealed in a full robe. Under his hood, his face was cast into black shadow by the light from above, but the folds from the hood made it clear that he was a unicorn. And enough light bounced up from the marbled floor to recognize a mottled brown coat.
"Greetings, little Pip,"
said a familiar voice that I couldn't quite place. The voice had the tones of a refined gentle stallion, but shied away from sounding too haughty.
"We apologize for the rude awakening."
"We who?"
I asked, but I already knew.
"We call ourselves the Twilight Society," the gentle stallion proclaimed.
I forced myself not to ask if he was kidding.
"Very enigmatic, and who are you really?"
I said, biting back deeper sarcasm.
"And what do you want?"
The unicorn under the hood restrained a chortle. He whinnied.
"Why, that is exactly correct. You too have enigmatic titles, do you not? Stable Dweller, Wasteland Heroine? We have been told that you are the savior of the wasteland and the bringer of light."
I cringed. They weren't titles I had ever wanted, nor ones I had ever thought myself worthy of. And now I was under a spotlight, being judged for a reputation I couldn't control and couldn't live up to.
"What we want," the gentle stallion continued, "is to know who are you, really."
I snorted.
"And you kidnapped me to find out? You could have just asked."
"These conversations are not for prying ears," another voice said from the darkness to my left.
"You have already been places you were not meant to be, shown things no pony was allowed to reveal," a third voice said, this time to my right. Suddenly, I was worried for Omage. She'd clearly broken the rules of this overly dramatic group of ponies to help me. What might they do in response? Murmurs rippled through the darkness around me. "You have used for your own goals the very secrets that we hold guardianship over."
"Oh. I know too much, right? Is that what this is?"
"That is but half of what this is," the gentle stallion said, addressing me. "We have been counseled to make available to you the full might and mystery of this place,
We have not yet made our decision, yet you have availed yourself of our secrets anyway.
You are a risk, claimed the voice from my right. Not only to us, but all that could one day be accomplished with what we got here. I stomped. Bullshit! I've heard that crap before. 200 years and you've done nothing with what you have.
I turned, advancing towards the source of the voice on my right. A cloaked pony hiding under a hood as he hid in the shadows. He backed up, bristling nervously.
You're hiding your secrets away because they're special, I spat. And they make you feel special and important, not because you're ever going to put them to use to make a difference.
Ten Pony Tower is a bastion of civilization in the wilderness, the gentle stallion commented serenely. I would suggest we have done quite a lot.
Yeah, it is, but that isn't you, is it?
I rounded on him.
The only damn one of you doing any good at all is...
I paused before I said her name.
Is DJ Pawn 3.
At least she can keep a secret.
At least she can keep a secret.
Nickered yet a fourth voice from somewhere behind me. We are only the most recent inheritors of these secrets. You are unwise to judge us by the failures of those in generations past, the gentle stallion said. I frowned, biting my tongue. He had a point. And perhaps you are right, the gentle stallion said earnestly. Perhaps it is time for us to make a greater use of what is hidden here, but to do so carries a great risk, not only from the greedy and wicked outside our gates, but from within. Who can we trust to guide the use of this power and these resources? Who can we know will not become corrupted by it?
I sighed heavily. What do you want from me? I asked. How can I persuade you that I'm not going to become the next Red Eye if I'm given a little help?
Your memories. I jolted with shock.
What?
You had several days of memories extracted earlier today from within our secluded chambers. We require access to those memories.
They wanted my memories? A chunk of my life?
One that even I didn't know the contents of?
No.
I stomped.
Those are my memories. They're private.
We could ask you who you are, but you would only tell us what you want us to hear. The perceptions of others are fragments and heavily colored by their own perceptions. How better could we possibly learn who you really are?
I fumed. I didn't want to trust something so precious to these strangers. I didn't trust them. I trusted Omash. That was all. Plus, it felt wrong, like a violation.
Which I knew was hypocritical at best considering how much time I'd spent prying into the memories of others.
The voice on my left intoned, We already know that Red Eye is threatening this tower and the lives of every pony in it to motivate you. If you are playing with our lives, do you not think we at least deserve to know what the score is?
I stopped fuming, considering that. Finally, I took a deep breath.
Will I get them back?
If the answer was no, this deal was off. And if necessary, I would fight my way out of here. Of course, the gentle stallion told me.
Fine, then yes, but on two conditions.
Underneath his robe, the gentle stallion cocked his head. And what conditions would those be?
One, the memories do not leave Omaja's possession. I trust her to guard them. So far, I have no reason to trust any of the rest of you.
Agreed. And two?
Omash continues to live here as long as she wants, safe from any repercussions for having helped me or revealing what she did.
Some murmurs. Unhappy ones.
Non-negotiable, I said. I hoped I had this card to play. What if they decided that they really weren't that interested in me after all?
But the gentle stallion answered. Agreed. I felt a sigh of relief. Conditionally. I felt my heart skip a beat. The roped pony elaborated. No actions will be taken against Omash until all of us had had the opportunity to view the memory orbs. Should what they reveal of your character and methods persuade us to deem you an asset rather than a threat, then no actions will be taken against her and record of her misdeeds will be expunged. If, however, your memories prove that you are a menace to our society or this tower as a whole, then Omash will be judged accordingly.
I knew that by agreeing to this I would be putting my memories in jeopardy, running the risks that I might never see them. But in the end, what else could I do? My memories were a small price to pay compared to the potential rewards. I prayed that I had at least a shred of the sort of character that DJ Pawn 3 attributed to me. I was relying on myself to have been a decent pony.
I was given the memory orb again and instructed to lose myself in it while they returned me back to the bench they took me from. All of which seemed utterly silly to me, but I went along anyway. I suspected Lifebloom was with them, and that made me feel just a touch safer, if only because Omarge and Velvet seemed to think well of him. When I came out of the memory orb for the second time, the feeling of déjà vu was almost enough to make me wonder if I had imagined the Twilight Society. I wondered how often ponies in Ten Pony Tower suddenly found their days interrupted and what the Twilight Society used when there wasn't a convenient memory orb in play. Revisiting the orb in the wake of my odd abduction had left me thinking about secrets. About the decimation of information. Covered operations dependent on secrecy for the safety of those involved. But it seemed cruel for Rainbow Dash and Pinkie Pie to leave Applejack and Rarity in the dark about Sakura, believing that a close friend of theirs had betrayed them. Was it necessary to cause them that pain? Could they have been trusted with that secret? Everything I had seen suggested that Rarity was well practiced in keeping secrets, but Applejack? How convincing could the bearer of the element of honesty be if put into a position where she had to maintain a lie? Was it better for every pony, and one zebra, that she not know? I packed up the memory orb, checking my pip bag to make sure the other one was still with me, and all my equipment was still in its proper place. Then, getting up, I started to walk down the hallway, away from the bathrooms. My mind was still engaged in contemplation. Likewise, it was clear from several previous memories that the mares knew the truth about zebra religion. Or at least knew enough about their beliefs regarding Nightmare Moon to try to use that against them. But Steelhoofs had been blindsided by the idea. Clearly a decision had been made by the heads of government not to inform the general population or even the lower ranks. I found myself second-guessing that decision, even though I could understand why. How demoralizing would that knowledge have been? Would knowing have served any positive purpose? Littlehorn was such a painful horror, the massacre of a school full of pony children, that it left a black and weeping wound in the psyche of Equestria. Littlehorn had surely been a point of no return for both sides. At that point, I wondered if the ponies would have been any more capable of surrender than the zebras were. A zebra dropped in front of me. I jumped back, already floating out little Macintosh, my heart pounding. But recognition struck and relief passed over me.
Zenith, you scared me!
Flustered, I hastily slid little Macintosh back into its holster.
I mean, you broke my train of thought.
Brave little pony, she intoned.
Where have you been?
Hiding, she said simply. When they took you, I followed. But they did not seem to hurt or threaten you, so I did not act.
I suddenly felt a lot better about the day's strange interlude. At the same time, I realized that I needed to speak to Omarge and let her know what was coming, if she didn't already.
I'm going to see Omarge, I said, not adding, if she'll let me. Are you okay following?
I remembered the zebra's discomfort with Omarge and wondered if that was why I hadn't seen her all day. Well, that and her ability to hide like a living stealth bug, and on the ceiling, no less.
If you wish.
I stopped.
Well, what do you wish?
It does not matter, Zenith informed me. I am not welcome here, so I cannot do as I wish. For too many, my stripes make me the enemy. Or worse, a demon from the past, responsible for all the misery in this world.
That's unfair.
It does not matter that it is unfair. It still is.
She looked down. Sometimes I feel as if I am an earth pony and that my stripes are really great wounds, a punishment for some great wrong the ancestors of my ancestors were connected to. I shuddered, as much at the pain and resignation in her voice as the mental image her words conjured. There had to be something I could do.
If you could do anything, what would you want to do most?
I would like to go shopping, Zenith said.
She smiled at my surprise.
What? Everyone likes to shop. I would like to be able to stride into a store, look around, greeting the sales pony and make purchases, all while being treated only as rudely as every other pony customer is.
I felt a little rocketed by the normalcy of the request. I tried to imagine how it must be not to even be able to go into a store, to buy. I couldn't, and I felt awful for it. Surely there had to be a way to fix this.
We could dye her coat a new color, Omarge suggested as she floated the huge painting of Splendid Valley away from her safe. She was moving my box of memory orbs to another location, so she would not have to reveal the safe when the Twilight Society came for them.
A near black charcoal would hide her beautiful straps enough for a modest gown and hat to obscure them completely. Although, for the life of me, I can't imagine wanting to do that. Omash turned and smiled warmly to Zenith. You're gorgeous the way you are.
Zenith scowled.
I'm being honest, Omash insisted. I'm sure my little pit has drank in the sight of you at least once, haven't you, little Pip?
She asked, deliberately putting me in a humiliating spotlight. All the worse because I immediately thought of staring at Zenith's flanks back in stable two.
See? Omash laughed. That burning face means little Pip's been watching you.
Zenith was staring at me. I sank to the floor, putting my forehoofs over my head. After a few excruciating moments, Zenith replied,
I am a zebra, and a scarred one at that. Yes, Omash agreed, unlocking her safe. And a beautiful, sexy mare of a zebra at that. A simple glamour should then mask your zebra-ness from notice,
Omash suggested as she swung the door of the safe open.
But are you sure you want to hide who and what you are like this? I hide all the time,
Zenith said simply.
This is no diff...
Zenith made a slight choking noise, backing up, her eyes fixed on something just beyond Omash. At her reaction, we both followed her gaze. The Star Blaster.
You have it locked away like a treasured possession,
Zenith intoned. Omash frowned.
I have it locked up to keep it from hurting any pony.
Zenith blinked. The zebra cast a look to me as she slowly asked,
Then you know that it yearns to kill.
Omash gave me a quick, quizzical look. I tried to return it with an expression that told her Zenith was deadly serious in the claim. Omash didn't laugh. She didn't look like she found the idea even a little funny.
I'll admit, I'm a much better shot with that thing than I've ever been with any other weapon I've tried, including other magical energy weapons, but I attribute that to magical energy weapons being damn rare in most of the equestrian wasteland and all the others I have tried being poorly maintained pieces of rubbish.
Zenith remained silent, waiting.
No, I don't think it actually wants to kill. I don't believe that thing is alive or sentient,
Omash told her. But I do believe that it is made by crafters with murderous intentions.
Crafters?
Zenith asked.
It's a complex technomagical tool. I don't think the stars just willed it into existence. Someone or something made it.
She looked at the zebra.
Isn't that how the stars work? They help guide people to their own destruction?
I was startled by the response. I remembered now that it was Omash who first spoke of me of the zebra's mythology, and she had spoken as one who put some credence to the notions.
Then you believe as we do?
Zenith asked slowly. I believe that most all religion is born of a mixture of truth and fantasy, hope and fear. How much truth is in any one mythology is hard to say. Omash pulled the box full of memories from the safe before closing the safe up again, sealing the weapon from the stars away once more. But I believe that the amount of truth in the zebra's legends is a good bit more than zero. I don't believe that your ancient ancestors understood the stars nearly as much as they believed they did. Omash looked to me, addressing us both. But I have seen enough to be certain that the void beyond the moon holds wonders and terrors far beyond our imaginations, and that at least some of what is out there is malicious beyond our conception of evil, and is looking this way with hostile intentions.
I've changed my mind,
claimed the exotic voice of the charcoal black earth pony next to me, who was really Zenith.
I like her.
Zenith, the not-a-zebra, was peering into jars of strange things floating in stranger liquids that lined the back shelf of the secluded apothecary, which crouched around a corner from the main stores like a little colt hiding from bullies. The proprietor kept shooting us nasty looks, but I felt they were more directed at me than Zenith. She was dressed in a gown of subtle goldenrod and ivy with a matching white-brimmed hat. The entire ensemble made her look not only lovely, but right at home amongst the fine ladies and gentle stallions of Ten Pony Tower. I looked like me.
Like who?
I asked before I realized the obvious answer.
Omash?
I suddenly felt a little giddy. The not a zebra nodded with a smile.
I wanted to dance around shouting yes, but I was already getting enough looks from the proprietor.
Zenith had clearly been enjoying her evening, strolling openly down the streets, passing through the crowds, sitting down at the same restaurants and being served by the same snobbish waiters. Paying the same unreasonable prices as every pony else for confections made of sweet potato pudding and deep-fried applesauce. More than once, some pony had snidely suggested she take me to a dress shop and gave her sympathetic looks, as if I was a younger relative she had been burdened with and my appearance was some sort of useful rebellion. Sometimes I hated being small-framed.
"The selection here is wonderful," Zenith commented. "But I had not expected such high prices."
"In case you haven't noticed, miss," the stallion behind the counter grumped, "we're not getting any fresh product anytime soon. It's a seller's market."
The prices of everything in Ten Pony Tower had tripled since the first time I had been here. Red Eye's blockade was killing commerce with the caravans and scavengers. I could feel an undercurrent of worry in the marketplace. Earlier, a mare had snorted, exclaiming,
"The mere thought of the wines meant for my cellar being sold instead in one of those dirty little places like Gutterwill or Arbu gives me the vapors."
I had remembered how much I really didn't like the company of these ponies. Shouts from outside drew our attention. Zenith smiled politely to the stallion, glowering from behind the counter, saying,
"We will be right back."
He didn't look like he believed it and scowled at me as if I had been intentionally wasting his time. Backing away from him, I turned to follow Zenith out of the shop. Ladies and gentle stallions gathered by the nearest outside windows in small crowds. Prim and proper young fillies and colts squirmed about and climbed on their parents, momentarily forgetting proper decorum as they tried to get a peek. Zenith, revealing her ability to talk to these strangers, asked,
"What is the commotion?"
It surprised me, not for the first time, how easily she blended in now that the perceived stigma of her race had been obfuscated.
"The slavers,"
a colt replied as he quickly trotted past us, heading towards a window.
"They're leaving."
"I don't like this,"
I told Zenith as we stood at one of the windows looking down through the darkness of early night. The burning lights of torches drifted away from the base of Ten Pony Tower like rivulets of lava. Over half of Red Eye's forces were pulling out.
"The only reason I can think of for Retta to withdraw before I fulfilled my end of the bargain is if he decided to blow the tower anyway. Now."
"But then, would he not remove all of his men?"
Zenith asked cautiously.
"Not if he wanted to make sure we weren't able to evacuate," I suggested.
Although I realized it didn't make much sense, I couldn't think of another reason for this behavior.
"Perhaps it is part of your cunning plan?"
Zenith suggested hopefully.
"Doesn't feel like it." "Aren't I supposed to be being punished?"
I asked, sitting on Omage's bed inside Twilight Sparkle's Asinium, staring out the huge windows at the retreating forces. I was tense and worried. I wanted to know what Red Eye was up to. He was making a move, and while I had nothing but a gut instinct to base my opinions on, it didn't feel like this was something I'd predicted. Throughout the tower, ponies were cautiously optimistic.
"I gave up,"
Omage admitted as she sat down behind me and began to massage my shoulders, working to relieve my tension. Zenith had convinced me not to assume the worst, but that didn't keep me from contemplating all the other avenues of bad. Omage's gentle hoofs worked in slow circles over my shoulders and down my spine, moving towards my flanks. I couldn't hold back a sigh. My eyes flew open as a dark thought struck into my brain like a dagger.
"Omage, you know I've been tainted, right? The goddesses only know what the vile stuff did to me. I might be abnormal now."
Omage giggled softly, not at all the response I expected.
"Laugh,"
she said, sending a thrill up my spine.
"We've already had this conversation."
"Oh,"
I said, feeling embarrassed. Omage planted a kiss up the length of my mane.
"The highlights. Both Dr. Helpinghoof and Life Bloom have given you a look over. There is a tiny mutation, but it is benign. Nothing to worry about."
She gave one of my ears a nibble.
"The fact that you risked taint for me and the ponies of this tower has not gone unnoticed or unappreciated, especially by me."
I felt relief. The dagger in my brain melted away.
"I've even checked you over myself, quite thoroughly, and you are definitely still my little pip."
My ears shot up as she whispered,
"Op number 8.
I held Omash in my forelegs, nuzzling her softly. She leaned into me, her body warm, her breathing pleasantly heavy. Omash, I asked in trepidation. I didn't want to spoil the night. Yes, love? Omash's sweet voice panted gently up to me. Are you doing all right? After that? Oh, yes, she giggled. I tickled her absently, enjoying the ability to just touch her. You know what I mean. Since you have been rough lately, and a few days ago, what you had to do to save us. Omash sighed and called around to look at me, even though we couldn't really see each other in the darkness. After all you've been through for me, you're still more worried about me than yourself. That was a dodge, and I wasn't going to let her get away with it. Doesn't change the question. Joke Blue was usually the one doing the shooting, Omash admitted. I have only taken a life a few times, not counting beasts and robots, but each time it was to save some pony, although sometimes that pony was myself. She reached a hoof up to brush my muzzle. I don't like it, I don't enjoy it, and I'm really no good at it, but I don't regret it. The next morning a light rain had begun to drizzle, spotting the windows and making the grey on grey of the Manhattan ruins into a monochromatic haze. I had used my binoculars to search the ground below, startled to find that only a third of Red Eye's forces remained. But they looked like they were camped out permanently. My heart felt heavy and my head was foggy from a lack of sleep, the latter being entirely Omash's fault. Not that I minded, not even slightly. But I was beginning to feel guilty for the amount of attention she lavished on me compared to the other way around. I couldn't do anywhere near the things to her that she could do to me, and I was beginning to feel inadequate in comparison. I'd reached the point where I was going to have to start asking her for instructions. A request that, no matter how I tried to phrase it in my head, always sounded pathetic rather than romantic. The little red wagon squeaked along behind me. I stopped as I reached the door to our suite. This time I raised a hoof and knocked. Twice. Calamity opens the door smiling.
Howdy, little pup. Morning.
Good morning to you too, Calamity. I see you're in a good mood.
Yep.
Are we ready to do this?
Calamity grinned.
I reckon she's been ready for a few days now.
He flapped his wings, scooting out of the way. Velvet Remedy lay on the very edge of her bed, and Calamity's now I was willing to bet. Her plaster-bound leg stretched out uncomfortably in front of her. Her eyes widened as she caught sight of the wagon, then narrowed.
What exactly is that for? Today's a big day, I said sweetly. Ready to go to the clinic and get that cast removed? I can remove it myself, Velvet Remedy insisted. And you're not hauling me around in that.
I wrapped her in a telekinetic blanket and floated my unicorn friend into the air.
Put me down.
Doctor's orders, Calamity reminded Velvet. Helping if wants to get a good look at your leg to make sure everything's healed proper.
We are your friends, I chimed in as she waved her legs helplessly in the air. We insist you get the best treatment and won't let you skimp out on it. You've always given us the best care and often shortchanged your own. Not this time.
I floated her down onto the wagon. She tried sticking her leg down and pushing away, but with her cast it was a losing battle. Finally, she tucked her three good legs in and settled into the little red wagon.
You're enjoying this, aren't you? Yep,
I said with a smile. I turned and strode out the door, pulling her slowly through the hall towards the elevator in the very same wagon she had once hauled me to the very same place in.
You are right,
I told Velvet as Dr. Helping Hoof did one final examination of my friend's foreleg. There was a slim scar that encircled her leg. It wouldn't even be visible when her coat had grown back. Velvet Remedy looked up at me as she flexed her foreleg in every possible way at the doctor's insistence. Life Bloom was standing nearby, his horn glowing as the spell allowed Helping Hoof to examine the inner workings of Velvet's leg.
You said that I can't be trusted, I reminded her.
She sighed heavily and started to say something that would surely have been comforting, but I didn't let her. I needed to say this.
And where party time mint dolls are concerned, you are right. I can't be trusted.
I frowned, trying to push the words out of my muzzle, knowing I had to. I don't know if I really needed them. There's a chance I never will.
She didn't know the context of that. Only Omash and Zenith knew that my memories were now being reviewed by the Twilight Society.
But I do know that when confronted with a chance to slip some into my saddlebags, I wasn't strong enough.
Vivid Remedy was looking at me sadly.
So, from now on, I need you to do what you said you would. Go through my things, check my pip bag, maybe Life Bloom can teach you a PTM detection spell, whatever it takes.
I trembled a little, hearing the tone of begging creep into my voice.
Please, I want your help. I need it.
Slowly, Velvet Remedy nodded.
Of course, little Pip.
Well, Dr. Helpinghoff announced, I'd say you've made a miraculous recovery, young lady. You're fit to go. He looked to Calamity. You can settle up the bill with Life Bloom on your way out.
Calamity nodded, wrapping his recently wounded wing around Velvet in a snag. Looking to me, he asked,
So, where to next?
I pressed my lips together, thinking.
The Canterlot Ruins are our goal now, but we have a few places to visit along the way. The village that Zenith believes her daughter lives in is on our way, but first we need to arm ourselves with all the information we can on surviving in the Pink Cloud, and that means our next trip has to be back to Stable 29.
The others nodded in agreement.
We need steel hoofs.
It was a particularly beautiful day in Ponyville. The sun was shining, pouring a warmth down on the equestrian village that cheered both the land and the soul. Only a few clouds spotted the sky and a mint-green pegasus flew about overhead, belatedly kicking them away. Below, brightly colored ponies trotted about their daily business, often stopping to give a neighborly hello to those they passed on the street. A trio of bunnies darted between bushes, carrying radishes pilfered from some pony's garden.
Oh my!
Fluttershy said, watching through strands of solid pink mane as the bunnies darted between her legs. For a moment, she seemed ready to break away from the other ponies she was walking with to fly after them.
You fellas doing all right?
Applejack commented, looking up into the sky.
But it just ain't the same without Ramble Dash.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. Twilight Sparkle told her, floating a letter out of her saddlebag. I got a letter from the princess today. She says that Rainbow Dash isn't just on a vacation. She's signed up for the new equestrian Skyguard.
Poor dear took what happened to the Wonderbolts really hard.
Rarity commented, adjusting her newest head creation so the feathers all float with the gentle summer breeze.
I can't say that I blame her.
Yes, well, the princess doesn't want to see her get put in harm's way, but it wouldn't be right for her to tell Dash no. So...
Twilight opened the letter as the others gathered around her, listening intently.
Princess Celestia has given us a mission. We are to travel to the Buffalo and try to strengthen diplomatic ties with them. Given Rainbow Dash's previous experience with them, the princess feels that she would be the ideal envoy.
Oh, goody!
Pinkie Pie bounced.
I've been working on my song and I think...
Oh, hell no!
Moaned Applejack.
Oh dear,
winced Rarity. Ummed Fluttershy.
No singing,
Twilight Sparkle said sternly.
But...
No singing,
she repeated.
Princess's orders.
Oh,
Twilight, darling,
Rarity asked concerned.
Did Princess Celestia say why exactly we are strengthening diplomatic ties with the Buffalo? I mean, other than to keep Rainbow Dash occupied.
Twilight shook her head. A heavy silence fell over the group of friends that was distinctly at odds with the cheery brightness of the day. Applejack was the one who broke it.
I heard talk from some of the folk at the Farmer's Expo last week. They're saying...
She paused, as if scared of the words she was thinking and what would happen if she said them aloud.
We might be heading to war.
Fluttershy gasped and disappeared behind a stump.
That's impossible, Applejack. Equestria has never had a real war in...
Twilight Sparkle paused, clearly running through her vast studies of equestrian history, and found nothing.
I don't think Equestria has ever had a war, at least not in over 1,000 years.
Yeah, well, we all know how mighty stubborn ponies can get when their livelihood are being threatened. Only this time, I fear it ain't gonna be pies they're throwing. Big Mac brought home one of those new tank of firearms to take care of the cockatrice that'd been attacking our pigs.
Applejack was interrupted by an upset squeak from Fluttershy, who had finally managed to come back out from behind her stump.
He wouldn't.
Sorry, Fluttershy, Applejack said apologetically. But that thing was killing our pigs. Sometimes you just gotta take care of dangerous predators the hard way.
You should have told me. I could have stopped him for you.
Fluttershy said uncharacteristically, raising her voice just a smidgen.
Now your pigs will stay dead forever, you know. Only cockatrice can reverse its own magic, and he would have if I'd had the chance to tell him to.
What? Applejack moaned. Not the truth.
Fluttershy turned meekly to Twilight Sparkle.
There's not really going to be a...
Her voice faltered on the word war, becoming barely a squeak.
Will there?
I hope not, Twilight said. I don't know what we'd do if there was.
But people would get hurt, and animals.
Fluttershy was trembling just at the thought.
We can't let that happen. We just can't.
I think that's why the princess wants us to start talking to the buffalo, Twilight said unsurely.
Well, whatever the reason, we'll do this together,
Rarity asserted.
Give me a few days to close up my shop and I'll be ready for the trip.
The others nodded.
You're right, and nothing we can't handle together,
Applejack said, smiling at Rarity.
Right, Twilight Sparkle said, back on firmer ground. Whatever the cause, Princess Celestia has given us this mission and we will not fail.
This was familiar to her. She'd done this before and she could do it again.
Every pony, make whatever arrangements you need to. We may be gone from Ponyville for a while. I'm going to go get Rainbow Dash. Let's meet back here in less than 2 days.
The faith she had in her friends virtually radiated from her. All of her friends nodded, Fluttershy looking both exceptionally nervous and particularly determined. Then every pony galloped off, leaving the yellow Pegasus standing on the path alone.
Oh, so much to do, but we must not fail. We must not,
she fretted.
Who will take care of my animals?
Can I help?
My host asked, flying up to the distraught yellow Pegasus.
Oh.
Then crouched meekly, looking around until she spotted me.
Oh, hello, Ditsy-Doo. I didn't see you there.
She looked away shyly.
Sure, if you would like.
I felt my host smile happily. Today was a good day.
Footnote: Maximum level.